Chapter 15, Handling the Toughest Conversations. Most teachers thrive under the high-performance instructional leadership model because it allows them to have rich, professionally rewarding conversations with instructional leaders, and the greater frequency of classroom visits provides a much more accurate representation of their practice than the formal observation process. However, there will always be a small percentage of teachers who resist any administrative presence in their classrooms or who have inflated views of their abilities. How can we maximize the impact of our classroom visits, even in the most challenging circumstances? To answer that question, we'll look at what to do when you're not welcome, how to discourage the impromptu performances, how to keep conversations on track, and how to maintain rigor and accuracy when discussing practice. React thoughtfully when you're not welcome. When you start to visit classrooms on a more regular basis, it's important to follow the process I outlined in Chapter 4, page 35, to set expectations, establish trust, and avoid triggering the predictable fears that teachers naturally tend to have. Even so, some teachers will resist any type of instructional leadership visit to their classroom. This resistance may take several forms, each of which we'll consider in turn. First, if a teacher tells you he or she doesn't want you to visit at all, or insists that you notify him or her in advance when you plan to visit, it's necessary and appropriate to use your positional power to justify your presence, but you should do so thoughtfully. If you simply insist that you have the right to visit classrooms at any time, you'll likely encounter further resistance, such as a refusal to talk, increased involvement from union representation, or complaints of harassment. These forms of resistance are no small matter, but they're easier to prevent than respond to. Instead of emphasizing your right to be in any classroom at any time, focus on your responsibilities as an instructional leader. The primary benefit of visiting classrooms on a regular basis is the decisional information you obtain from seeing teachers at work and talking with them about their practice. If a teacher objects to your unannounced visits, calmly explain your need for firsthand information about students and their learning and about teachers and their teaching. Emphasize that it's your job to be in classrooms and that you can't fulfill your responsibilities effectively without being in classrooms. Second, teachers may resist talking with you during or after your visits. In many cases, this resistance comes from the grueling schedule most teachers face. They may simply not have time to talk with you and accomplish everything else they'd planned for the day. We want to have impactful conversations with teachers, but we don't want to prevent them from using the restroom, being ready for their next class, or keeping an appointment they've made with someone else. When you approach a teacher to talk about your visit, start by asking if he or she has a moment to talk. If not, ask when a better time would be and follow up then. This small courtesy can go a long way. If it becomes apparent that the teacher's preferred time to talk is never, explain that you want to make sure that you understand the context of what you saw. For example, what happened before and after you visited. Most teachers are eager to explain themselves and ensure that others see their practice in the best possible light, so this will resolve the majority of issues. For the small number of remaining teachers who continue to resist your visits or follow-up conversations, it may be necessary to clarify your expectations for all staff and how they align with your commitment to visit all classrooms regularly and talk individually with each teacher about what you see. Teachers need to know you're not singling them out, and when they see that you're visiting their peers as well, they'll tend to avoid singling themselves out by resisting. Ultimately, you may need to state in unambiguous terms that your visits are a condition of the teacher's employment. If he or she would prefer not to be observed or talk about his or her practice, he or she will need to find another place to work. However, if you encounter this level of resistance from more than two or three people, it's more effective to address it as a trust issue rather than rely on positional power. Trust is essential for achieving the benefits of the high-performance instructional leadership model, so it's best to avoid pulling rank with all but your most resistant teachers. Discourage the impromptu dog and pony show. A more common challenge to productive classroom visits is that teachers may change their behavior or even the activities that students engage in the moment you walk into the room. One of the primary benefits of unannounced classroom visits is that they allow you to see what's taking place under more typical circumstances than a pre-planned formal observation, Marshall 2013. Even so, if teachers think they know what you want to see, they may strive to put on a miniature dog and pony show whenever you arrive. One teacher I worked with didn't complain when I started to visit her classroom regularly, but she undermined my purpose for visiting, perhaps unintentionally, by stopping the class, announcing my presence, and asking the class to greet me in unison, "Good morning, Mr. Bader." She then described what students were doing, explained its purpose, and asked specific students to share their work with me. This prevented me from understanding what had been taking place prior to my arrival, so I explained my purposes for visiting and asked that the class continue with their work whenever I visited. My visits became much more productive, and our conversations improved markedly. Most teachers won't stop their lessons when you visit if you've set expectations carefully. Instead, you may find that they're putting on a show to ensure that you see what they believe you're hoping to see. This, too, is a matter of setting expectations. If you see teachers scrambling to use a certain strategy the moment you walk into the room, it's likely because you or someone else in your school or district set the expectation that teachers use that strategy on a regular basis. It's entirely rational, then, for them to put on a show for you. Teachers know you only observe them for a tiny fraction of their total instructional time, and they know they won't get credit for using the strategy unless you see it during your brief visits. To discourage this behavior, avoid telling teachers that you're looking for a specific strategy or practice when you visit. It may be tempting to try to collect data on the use of specific practices when you visit classrooms, but in most cases, this simply does not work. You stand a small chance of seeing any particular strategy in brief visits, and if teachers know what to expect, they'll strive to ensure that you see it. Note that this is a different matter from having an instructional focus, such as rigor, on which you center your conversations with teachers. Since rigor is a characteristic of instruction rather than a specific behavior, such a focus is less likely to distort what you see when you visit. Keep conversations on track. Some teachers may welcome your visits and the opportunity to talk with you, yet still divert the conversation into non-instructional matters. This may be a defensive mechanism to avoid talking about areas where they may need to make improvements, or it may simply be a chance for the teacher to vent or get your help with a problem. For your post-visit conversations with teachers to be productive, it's essential that they remain rooted in the evidence of what actually took place in the classroom. For teachers who tend to push the conversation in non-instructional directions, it may be helpful to start by sharing what you noticed and treating those observations as the starting point for the conversation. You may want to avoid opening with a general comment like, "How's it going?" because the teacher may see it as an invitation to introduce any topic he or she has in mind. Once you're talking about the evidence itself, you may encounter a second type of diversion, excessive focus on what students should be doing differently, rather than the teacher's instructional decisions. The more you attempt to judge the success of the lesson, the more teachers will feel pressure to defend themselves by shifting responsibility to students. While it's certainly true that learning requires effort from both the teacher and the students, we want these conversations to improve teachers' ability to make high-quality instructional decisions, not to assign blame for any shortcomings in the lesson. To avoid student-blaming diversions, use the precise, leveled language of your instructional framework to describe specific incidents that arose in the lesson. While it's not our goal to rate the lesson, it's important that we obtain our descriptive language from a shared instructional framework so we can establish clarity about the story the evidence is telling. For example, if you notice that transitions are taking too long during one of your class visits, you might glance at Danielson's 2007 Domain 2, Component C, Managing Classroom Procedures, and notice that the phrase, quote, "much instructional time is lost due to inefficient classroom routines and procedures," end quote, appears in the unsatisfactory column. While you should avoid giving a rating of the lesson, you can guide your conversation with the teacher in the right direction by using the framework's leveled language. You might first say, "Looking at my notes, I'm noticing that it took 7 minutes for students to put away their materials and return to their seats. Let's look at our framework and see what it says about classroom routines and procedures. What do you think might make transitions more efficient?" Then give the teacher time to review the framework and identify the relevant portions of the rubric. This will keep responsibility where it belongs, with the teacher. Maintain rigor and accuracy in discussing levels of practice. When you use specific leveled descriptors from your instructional framework to discuss the evidence from a visit with the teacher's incentive is to cast his or her own practice in the best possible light. After all, there's no reason the teacher should help you obtain evidence of poor or mediocre performance. Does this mean that every conversation needs to become a back-and-forth argument about the quality of the lesson? Since these arguments focus on rating what the teacher has already done rather than informing future decisions, they're counterproductive given the purposes we've established. To avoid this tug of war, we can emphasize clear descriptions of practice using the leveled language without actually rating the lesson. If you and the teacher can't agree on what language from your framework is most appropriate, you can agree that more evidence would be helpful, and you can plan to discuss the same topic after your next visit. Day 15 Action Challenge. Prepare for challenging conversations. Identify the teachers who are engaging in the most challenging behaviors during your visits and conversations. What types of resistance are you seeing? Opposition to your presence? Reluctance to talk? Defensiveness? Inflated self-perceptions? In your next conversation with a challenging teacher, keep the focus on the evidence from your visit and start to make clearer, more explicit references to your instructional framework. You may be tempted to visit these teachers less often in order to avoid these challenging conversations. To resist this tendency, continue your visits to classrooms according to the rotation you've been following, and don't allow yourself to skip anyone. Remember not to begin taking written notes until your third cycle of visits. In the meantime, simply pay attention during your visits and be prepared to share what you noticed in the follow-up conversation. You may want to consider the following questions for reflection. What will most likely be my next challenging conversation? Who will it be with, and what will we need to talk about? What are the most common emotions I have when observing in the classroom of a teacher with challenging behaviors? How can I best be genuinely helpful to this teacher the next time we talk?